This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 084.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Dr. Michael Bug, Dr. Jonathan Light. And Johnny, I can't tell because you're sitting down, but you still got your tool belt on?
My tool belt has come off for the evening.
Okay. I was texting Jonathan earlier today and he was at the veterinary clinic playing handyman.
That's right. Actually, kind of fun and reminiscent of the old Reno days. And sometimes Sundays when the vet clinic's closed is my day to be able to get in there and do the to-do list that adds up over time. So today was that day.
Yeah, it's amazing how those little tasks that just need to get done by someone somewhere add up. But it's also amazing how much you can tackle in a day.
Well, and how much once you're in the groove of things, that first one, you know, to get the momentum, to effort. You tackle the hardest and then you get that done. You feel proud and you just keep on going. And I enjoy that work. That's that handyman work. That's that seeing the accomplishment. And again, I know that tomorrow, multiple things that they're going to be smiling at that they have no idea is actually done. So I like it. What are you giggling about back?
I am giggling about, I don't know why. I had a flashback to the very first episode, Jonathan, like 00J. When you were telling me about building birdhouses, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So I was playing with wood today. That's what I was doing. So I was cutting some 2x4s and I had some 3/4 inch plywood. I had to get glued on. We got a new cash register box set. So I was living my dream.
You are. You love it. Okay. Tangent, but serious question. How many of these like miscellaneous hours as a vet clinic owner, you know, in a week or in a month, however you want to answer it, like just all of these things, would you say there is? Because like, this is really an intangible, right? That like doesn't fall under a job description per se, where it's like, I just got to go in Sunday and, you know, do these
hammer it out.
Yeah.
You know what? That's such a, man, it's such a broad question because I did probably an hour and a half worth of work and admin work on the computer yesterday. We're finish out some accounting pieces in that for end of month and then some end of year stuff that's still coming through. That's like, I don't know. I don't know on a month to month, if I were to tackle that, maybe 10 to 15 in addition, maybe. And again, depends by the month.
It's hard to quantify. And I think even Rosalie and I this morning in the rental business had to run to a rental and just sort of an odd task that like we have contractors, but it was too small to call a contractor and it needed to be done. And it honestly, after this many years, it's just sort of the way of life. Like we don't really bat an eye. It's like, oh, we got to swing by this rental on the way to that thing that we're doing. And it's just, that's how we live now.
Well, isn't that the case? And that becomes part of your lifestyle to the good or the bad, because I did think about that multiple times. I could hire this out to a handyman that does it. But like you said, the job is so small. I know exactly where and what I need to do. And there's also for me a sense of feeling of I'm giving back to the team. They've asked for these things to be done. And I'm doing them on a Sunday when they're not there. I'm looking forward to them having what they need to get things accomplished better tomorrow than they had yesterday. That's a good sense that, yeah, you could pay somebody to do it. It's not quite the same.
Yeah. No, I can see that. Yeah, that would feel good, you know, surprising the team with some upgrades.
Yep, that's it. And, you know, similar to you, these are these pieces behind the scenes that we don't Instagram about, or we don't maybe put out, but are a reality of the businesses that you and I are in. It's part of it. And as the leader and as the boss, these is, you know, if you don't do it, you better figure out somebody else that's going to do it, or else things go to shit real quick.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, it, I know now we're, this is almost like a its own episode. It's a love hate relationship for me anyway, because on the hate side of it, sometimes I get a little bit envious, you know, back when you're just sort of working a job where you can go home in theory. I know it's hard emotionally. Sometimes we carry that with us, but in theory, you can just at 5 o'clock on Friday, you're off for the weekend. Yeah. And it's like, if you're in the entrepreneur world, that's not the case.
Never. And even for those that really do have their time figured out and or have their entire team, and you know, that's always an evolution over time, you're still not turned off.
Yeah.
There's still the 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning that comes up. That happened to me last week. I went, wait a second. How come I didn't see that come through on payroll? Talk about it the next day. Oh yeah, we missed that. And for some reason, that piece of that payroll register showed up in my head at 3:02. And it was incorrect. Why does that happen? Because I'm the entrepreneur on this.
Yeah. Well, there we go, Jonathan. I guess this is what we're bantering about. What we didn't know. We're like, just turn record on. We'll figure it out. So here it is.
Hopefully it's useful for people, both the good. And I enjoy this part as well, too. And we've talked about that in the past. For some people, that would be hell. That's all right.
Yeah. And the this is the last piece I'll say, because and then we'll jump into the episode. And it's an excellent episode.
Darn right it is.
We are recording this intro on a Sunday evening, and we recorded the actual episode sometime the week previous, because that is our life, where it was like we had the scheduled time for the episode, and then it was like, Kate, we both have to run, and you and I have been trying to connect to record this intro, which is like 5 minutes, and we're squeezing it in Sunday night, and this episode is dropping on Wednesday.
That is the reality sometimes. I literally picked up my daughter, put her into bed, came downstairs, and here we are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, into today's episode, Dr. Jordan Woodsworth is back with us for part 3 of our 4-part mini series. As a reminder, episode 76, open-ended questions, episode 79, nonverbal communication, and today, episode 84, active listening. We are also going to drop episode 85, empathy, immediately next week, because as Jordan talks about, active listening and empathy go hand in hand. This was a big episode, and we debriefed after it, the three of us, for a long time. What was some things that jump out to you, Jonathan?
Plain and simple, and we've had some amazing guests on. These last two episodes, part 3 and part 4, I think will go down as my favorite so far. I really do. There is so many tactics and so many different ways of looking at it, and Jordan brought to the table, that are useful in day-to-day life, both from those active listening and empathy skills. This one, I'm looking forward to listening to this a second, third, and fourth time. I don't really like listening to myself speak or on these podcasts. I'm there for Jordan, and there's some gold.
There's major gold here. For me, everyone pay attention to the part when Jordan talks about shifting I understand over to I can imagine. That one just like slapped me across the face. I told Rosalie about it, and I was like, how have I not picked up on this earlier in life? Like 37 years old, and I'm finally learning this.
Dude, did I not text you about 30 minutes after the session was over, after that recording, and say, I just made a tough phone call, use the I can imagine, and had a great conversation. And it wasn't an easy conversation, but I utilized those skills. And I was like, wait a second, similar to you, how have I never known this before? Or maybe I just wasn't at the right time to receive it correctly. And now I am. That's probably more likely the case.
I like that, Jonathan. Either way, this is a good one, everyone. Part 3 of 4. Active listening, Dr. Jordan Woodsworth, you are going to love it. Hey everyone, welcome back. Part 3 of our 4-part mini series with friend of the show, Dr. Jordan Woodsworth. Before we dive in, I have a quick story, Jordan, but I also want to point out for our YouTube listeners, we're seeing an example of the autonomic system that Jordan touched on, with Johnny blushing away because he's already false started this podcast once. So we're taking another crack at it. I had to throw him under the bus there.
Just like that. But it is true. I threw you under twice there at the start. So fair okay, so point.
Jordan, before we get into active / reflective listening, and you can kind of dissect that for us, I have to tell a quick story to our listeners about you saving my life yesterday. So
can't wait to hear it.
So I was out for my run, and I thought it'd be a good idea to brush up on your content because it's been a while since we had you on. And so I was listening to the episode on nonverbal communication. And it was right at the point when we were talking about dealing with fractious cats. And you said something to the effect of our nervous system can communicate with the nervous system of others. You were referring to cats. And then you said, and humans as well. Probably my favorite line in there was, this isn't woo-woo, it's science. And I just, how matter of fact you said science, but I digress. I was coming up, I was probably about 50 feet away from a very nervous and large Akita, right? And the owner was not paying attention and had him on like a super long, like more of a lead than a leash. Luckily, not a retractable one. But it was funny because you were walking through how we communicate by not saying anything. And here I am sprinting towards an Akita. I had my hood on, covered, kind of like a menacing type posture. And I could tell, I looked up and I was like, this dog is having none of this. And on my current like path, I was going to run between him and his owner. And I was like, oh no, my life is going to end here. So I like stopped, pulled the hood down, smiled, like diverted course. But the timing of it was just unreal. How you were in my earbuds telling me about like, what was it? 80% of what we say is nonverbal. And I was like, wow, I'm telling this Akita right now that I'm going to attack his owner. And I was like, I better change what I'm saying here. So you can put me on the list of, I know you keep one at home of lives you've saved. So I'm now on it.
Yeah, I definitely keep that list. So I will put a check beside your name for sure.
Excellent. Okay, Jordan, well, let's dive in part three here. I'm saying active / reflective listening. And I know in our brief pre-conversation, you said they're the same thing. Why don't we just jump in, introduce this concept to our listeners, and we'll get rolling.
Yeah. And so when I first was learning about communication, when I started my job at the vet college back in 2012, I learned of this as reflective listening. And part of the reason for that is the concept with this tool is that you're kind of holding a mirror up to with your verbal skills to the person you're communicating with by taking what you've heard them say and giving it back to them as you've understood it. And so that's where the term reflective listening comes from. But the other piece of this skill is really actively engaging with what it is that the person is saying and communicating to you so that you can do that part. So I think we've kind of moved towards calling it more active listening, just because that's the key piece of it, is being able to really focus on what the person is saying and engage with it fully so that you can summarize and reflect back to them what you've heard them say. So that's the nomenclature there. But when you hear reflective listening or active listening, we're talking about the same skill, essentially. And so for this episode and then the next one that I'll be doing about empathy, these two things go together so, so tightly. I'm such a hand talker. I always put my hands like this and I'm talking about empathy and active listening kind of gripped together, because they are, you almost can't have one without the other. Certainly it's really difficult to have to express empathy if you haven't also been actively listening. So as I said, active listening kind of opens up those opportunities for empathy. So it's a really necessary skill to focus on here. These can be kind of complex tools, but they're, you know, at the heart of them, they're fairly simple, but they're not easy. Right? So they're not easy to implement. So this is why we need to, you know, understand what they are and how to apply them and how we can maximize, like identify and then maximize our opportunities to use these so that we can connect with our clients in a whole bunch of different situations. So these can be happy situations, these can be heated situations, these can be, you know, sad situations. And as I've said with all of the other skills, these are transferable. So you're going to be able to use them in your daily life. Mike, you just gave a great example of being able to apply one of our skills in a real life situation. And I can think of so many situations at home, you know, with my extended family, with friends, where these skills really apply. So knowing what they are and how to use them is incredibly important.
May I ask a beginner question, Jordan?
Of course.
How does one lead into the other? How does active listening lead into empathy?
We're going to get there.
Okay. I will listen.
Actively listening, Johnny.
What I'm doing this morning, all morning long.
Okay. So active listening, like I kind of summarized at the beginning, is stating back in your own words the content and feelings behind a message that you're receiving from someone. So this is the best tool that we have for communicating our understanding. And it allows people to help us sort of redirect our understanding if what we've sort of reflected back to them has been inaccurate, or to add further detail. And really it helps sort of used in concert with our open-ended questions and with our nonverbal communication as well, helps us to get at the heart of what's going on and really get an idea of what it is that's going on for the person we're connecting. So as I mentioned before, it kind of represents a two-way mirror to the client. So not only can the client hear from your mouth what he or she is saying, but they can hear themselves saying it, and then they can hear it back from you, right? So what happens then is that the client knows that you are listening. They know that you've heard them, and they, as I mentioned before, can correct you, can redirect you, do any of those things, and can elaborate. So this is something that helps us because it invites the client or the person we're communicating with to more deeply get into their story. And it's the tool that will do that better than any other that we have. So you can ask all of the lovely open-ended questions you want, but unless you're actively listening and sort of conveying your understanding and allowing clients the space to add more, you're not going to get to that deep level the way that you will if you are actually using this skill.
So and sorry, Jordan, to jump in, I'm kind of picturing this like it's almost like this can supercharge the open-ended questions, because once the client or whoever you're communicating with knows that you care and knows how much you care, and then you've invited them to go deeper in the conversation, they'll accept that invitation. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And it really is. So in a minute, we're going to talk about some stems that you can use, like some examples of active listening statements. And you can, as you mentioned, use then an open-ended question to extend that, which I think is a really important way to combine these skills. Yeah. So in terms of some stems, so again, when we're practicing active listening, it's helpful to have these back pocket phrases. I talked about those with open-ended questions, and I think this is another area where it's really, really helpful to have them. So some examples of stems would be, so I hear you saying that you're frustrated. And if you add another open-ended question, you could say, tell me more about what that's like for you, right? Or tell me more about the source of your frustration. Another one might be, it sounds like this worked out better than we originally thought, right? And so that's a great thing. And we can start to imagine with these how this might then lead to an opportunity for an empathic statement. And we'll get more into those next episode, but you can start thinking about, you know, how you might be able to imagine what it's like for the person you're communicating with to be in that situation and communicate that clearly, okay? Another one would be, you're wondering if this surgery is safe or if it's going to be effective or what the outcomes might be. Or another one would be, and this is a common one that we're going to encounter in general practices, I hear you saying you're not sure that you're ready to consider euthanasia. And so, you know, adding an open-ended question. So what are your concerns about euthanasia at this point in time? And then again, that allows the client to go deeper, and then together you can connect over euthanasia being difficult. You have the opportunity to normalize and then again, empathize. So yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to ask a question on that first example where you said that they were feeling frustrated. is it really important to really label it, because that's your understanding of it. And then that's their opportunity to either like agree and accept it, or to step in and be like, no, that's not how I'm feeling. I'm feeling this.
Sure. Absolutely. And I think of this too with kids, right? So Mike, your daughter is at that age where she's starting to be able to talk about her feelings, I'm sure, right? And so it's really important as parents that we help our kids to label the things that they're feeling, but sometimes we get it wrong. And that's the same thing happens with our clients or with other people who we might be communicating with, because sometimes our understanding of what's going on with someone or what somebody is telling us verbally might actually be different from what they're experiencing. So again, when we think about this as a tool for understanding and connection, we really see that, yeah, as you mentioned, us sort of saying, this is what I'm understanding is happening for you. Someone can either say, yes, exactly, or no, I'm not feeling frustrated. I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling angry, or whatever else the feeling is. So it's a really emotionally intelligent communication tool. And again, it's one of those things where when we are talking about the art of veterinary medicine, this is it, man. Like, this is the stuff that really gets us to that point of being super good at our jobs, because not only are we good at technical aspects, but we can also do this piece where we really build trust and connection and relationships that last a long time with our clients. And even if you're someone who, say, you're working in a referral center, or you're, you know, working in specialty practice, and you maybe only see your clients for short periods of time for whatever it is that you're offering, these are still important, because next time their animal has a cruciate, they're going to want to come to you, right? Or next time their animal, you know, they have another great day with a GDB, they're going to ask for you as their internist, right? Like, there are all of these different things that are, you know, important to remember as far as connection being really the heart of the tool that we need to be striving for in veterinary medicine.
One last thing I'm going to jump in, it's repeating it, but I think this is really important to nail down, is those first few words. Because if I was to say to you, you are feeling frustrated, it's like, whoa. You just told me how I'm feeling, like, get lost. But if I can start that with, so I'm hearing that you are feeling frustrated, it's a completely different statement.
Yes, exactly. Because what you're saying is, this is what I've understood. Am I correct? And giving them the opportunity to say yes or no. And I think that, you know, we'll get into this again some more when we talk about empathy, but it is really important to distinguish between your, you know, what you're taking away and actually labeling things for people. And also saying, I understand, can sometimes be problematic, because we don't always understand the difficult things that people are going through, right? And so it can actually be kind of patronizing to say, I understand what's going on for you, because most often you don't. And so I really encourage people to rephrase that as, and this actually comes from our friend Erin Lawson, the social worker, where instead of saying, I understand, saying, I can imagine. Because then again, what you're doing is you're saying, for me, that would feel like X. And is that how it feels for you? So yeah, that's an important
distinction to make. Yeah, that's an important one. I hadn't really thought about that one very much, but yeah, it is. And you might be, in some situations, you just can't understand because you're not going through it. But the other mix up could be like, you're understanding totally different things. You know, like, you think you understand, but you're just off.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah, it can ramp up emotions as well too, especially when you're off in a situation that already might be elevated.
Yeah, that's right. And I think too, if we are, you know, it almost feels like you're claiming the experience, like just claiming it as your own, right? And I think that that's the last thing we want to do, particularly when people are in a vulnerable state or when they're angry or whatever it happens to be. So yeah, I think it's a really important one.
Okay. I do have I'm going to take you on a little tangent. Sorry, we'll come back. How can someone get in the frame, like, to be prepared to active listen? So what I'm meaning by that is, have you ever been in those conversations? And I'm really bad with this right off the start, where I'll meet someone, I'll be like, hey, what's your name? They'll say their name, but I'm already like thinking, like, what should I ask them about? And then I'm like, well, what was their name, man? Like, you didn't even listen to that. Now I don't want to ask them again. So how do you get prepared to actively listen?
I love that you asked this question because it's actually not a tangent at all. This is what I wanted to talk about next. So you nailed it. You're reading my mind.
This We're just, very you know, after this many episodes together, Jordan, it's, you know, simpatico or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
On fire.
Yeah. Do not touch your device. It's too hot. Okay. Silliness aside. So this is where it's a good spot to talk about the three steps for active listening. So you asked what you can do to prepare to actively listen. And the biggest number one step is to focus on the person, right? And we do that by suspending our own thoughts and judgments. So if you've got this really busy internal narrative where you're sort of, you know, thinking about the person and maybe what they look like or wondering what their, you know, background circumstance is like because, you know, maybe they look a certain way and you've kind of derived a judgment about that, or their animal looks or acts a certain way and you've derived a judgment about that, you're going to be really paying attention to that internal noise more than you're going to be paying attention to what's coming out of their mouth. So being present in the moment, which is really difficult for a lot of us to do, especially I find for myself with, you know, so many inputs all the time with social media and all this other stuff, that we tend to lose our attention spans a little bit. And so it can be really hard to do that. But it's a good mindfulness practice to, when you're communicating with somebody, try to shut off that internal noise. And doing that through eye contact can be a really good tool. But as far as tangents go, I just want to say that in some cases, direct eye contact is not culturally appropriate. And so we also want to be a little bit careful about that. And so maybe we don't stare somebody in the eyes. Maybe we, you know, actively watch their mouth as they're speaking, if you can, if they're not wearing a mask. Or you stare at a, you know, some other spot so that you're paying attention to them and you're focusing strictly on what they're saying. Okay. But also paying attention to those nonverbals and all of those things. So we want to try and avoid distractions if we can. So having conversations, especially if they're important in a quiet space, is a good idea. Don't interrupt. So we, again, I can't remember if I talked about this with open-ended questions, but we tend to interrupt our clients within about the first 15 seconds of a conversation. And so let's stop doing that. I do it to my kids all the time. They give me heck because I'm the worst, because I'm impatient, right? And my brain's always going 80 million miles a minute and I'm trying to like get all these things done. And so I tend to interrupt and be like, Mom, enough. So I have to do a better job of this with my kids. Again, we're all learning today. Reminding ourselves. And then, you know, asking those open-ended questions. This open-ended questions are an active listening tool, like we talked about before. So, sorry, was someone going
to
ask?
I was going to just to kind of wrap in this up. First of all, I love that you mentioned mindfulness because that jumped out right away. I was like, wow, mindfulness. And it's like almost like a cycle. Mindfulness will prepare you to be better at active listening, while active listening is also practicing mindfulness. It's kind of like a loop there. You had mentioned three steps, and just to help frame this for our listeners, is this all still in step one?
Yeah.
Okay. It is. That's all I wanted to clarify.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to, step two is to, once you've done that piece where you've suspended your judgment, you've shut off that internal narrative and you have, you know, internalize the message, you're going to restate, you're going to summarize, and you're going to validate. So this is the piece of reflecting, right? You're going to hold up that mirror and reflect back to them what you've understood. And, you know, this is the part where you're going to restate the content. You might pick out one or two words from it to really, because those might have been the most important words that you took away from it. And so you might want to take those out and reflect those back to the client. So maybe that's like, it's too expensive, or you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? Or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Or again, it could be those summarizing stems that we talked about. So what I hear you saying is, you know, this is a little bit over your budget capabilities today, or whatever it happens to be, right? It sounds like you've given this diet a good try and our, you know, our friend Lucy just doesn't care for it and you want to try something else, right? To summarize. And again, this could mean validating, particularly if you're seeing some of those nonverbal signs coming up, right? So if people are flushing, if they're tearing up or whatever it happens to be. And again, you know, so that could be something like, I can see how hard this has been for you. And that's really great because it's a combination of active listening and empathy together. So this is where those skills start to cross over and combine. And it's a really lovely kind of, you know, symbiotic relationship between those two skills. Okay. So that's the restating, the summarize, and the validating. The last step is, not only do we want to do those things, actively listen, suspend our judgment, and then be able to restate, summarize, and validate, we also want to listen to the words and the meaning behind them. So this is kind of bringing us back to nonverbal communication, because we know that not always do the things that come out of our face match our actual feelings or experiences, because that 80% of communication is nonverbal. And so being able to take what somebody is verbally saying to you and also sort of using what you're observing nonverbally to reflect back what you've understood based on the words and the meaning is a really important skill. And it takes a lot of observation. It takes practice. You know, it takes all of those things. And you might not always be at a point yet in your relationship with the person you're talking to where they'll be ready to go deeper with you and talk about the actual meaning behind what's going on for them. But just being able to validate that is really important.
In that context, Jordan, specifically for a person that you may not know well enough, but you recognize that the nonverbals are not matching what is being shared, how do you recommend handling that in a responsible, respectful way where they're telling you two different things? And if it's a client in front of you, or maybe a little bit of a difficult conversation, how do you recommend going about that in an active listening skill mantra?
So do you have an example, Johnny, of how that might happen?
Thinking about it on the fly in regards to a pre-surgical appointment where you've provided an estimate and that estimate is higher than what that person's thought that it may be. And they're telling you one thing and yet all their body language, the tone has all changed compared to what that prior discussion looked like.
Yeah. And so they're
they're saying it's all good. And you need to have the real conversation, because in the case of a surgery, et cetera, where there is easily, greater than $1,000 involved, this is a big deal to that individual as well as the practice.
Yeah. So and I think that's
how do you really call that out respectfully, or how do you recognize that in a manner that doesn't just put a person exactly on the defensive because, oh, wow, you're telling me that I'm cheap? No, that's not what this discussion is about at all.
Yeah. And so one of the things that you can do is, again, employ those open-ended questions, right? And so if you've gone through the estimate with them and they've given you that body language, they're like, okay, this is like either that you think that they're feeling like it's a little bit ridiculous or whatever it happens to be, you can ask something along the lines of, how does this estimate match up with what you were expecting? Because that gives them the opportunity to be like, yeah, like it's a bit different and I'm a little bit pissed off actually, right? Or you can say, you know, what questions do you have for me about this estimate and where we're going with this surgery? Or, you know, what concerns do you have with what we've discussed around the surgery and the cost? What budget concerns do you have?
There are individuals that, personality traits, styles, et cetera, are very conflict adverse. They don't want to share that face to face. And therefore, in this manner of active listening, it sounds like, again, you need to take different approaches for different individuals, but how generalized versus specific do you get with them? And you can see this trait come out quite a bit in veterinary medicine.
For sure. And I do think that one of the things that we can best do is to normalize that cost is a deal for people in our fields, right?
Definitely.
So because Yeah. And I think that, you know, a lot of times I get the sense that our clients feel guilty asking about cost, or that we're judging them for not wanting to spend all the money on their pets, or feeling like cost is a factor. So one of the things that I tend to do a lot of is to just bring that out in the open. And if it doesn't apply for people, that's okay. But to just say, you know, one of the things that we know in our field is that care is expensive. And sometimes what we're recommending for our patients doesn't always match up with what's possible in people's budgets. And so I'm going to let you know that this is an open and safe space to have conversations about that, and that we do have options, right? So if that's true, right? And it's always true, because we don't always have to go for the gold standard treatment option. There's a spectrum of care that we can implement for any situation, all the way from the most expensive options, you know, to euthanasia, right?
Thank you, Jordan. Those are great, valid points for any veterinarian, any veterinary professional. Doesn't matter whether that's technologist, reception, support.
It's a fascinating interplay here of all of the back pocket skills, like all the communication. We've had lots of different money conversations on the podcast, which brings so much emotion with it. And it is, you don't know which tool you're going to need to lean on. I really liked the how does this, you know, estimate match your expectations? I don't know if I had heard that before. I really like that one.
And it just brings everything down. You can feel it as you even said that, Mike, again. That just tone, there's no aggressiveness in that. There's a wanting to understand more, which I think in the essence of what you're describing for active listening is where we're after.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that because we should be seeking to understand and connect, that's what all of these communication tools are about. That if that's at the heart of our purpose, like if that's what we're driven by, is this desire to understand and connect, then it's really a lot easier to get out of that defensive headspace and to, you know, suspend those thoughts and judgments where we're making up a story about what's going on with the client and how they're judging your hospital and that they aren't good, you know, aren't good owners because they don't want to spend the $3,000 for X, Y, or Z, right? So I think that we can do a much better job if that's the space that we're coming from. And some of that often will have to do with how we're balancing ourselves, right? And how we're managing our own needs and the things that we need to do to be, you know, to be fully present in our jobs.
Absolutely. Man, that's fascinating, Jordan. Any, I guess, anything further, either on step three or anything else to add before we kind of wrap this one?
I think that, you know, this is a good place to talk about, you know, how we can practice some of this stuff, and what people can look forward to in our next episode about empathy.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know we kind of wrap each of these episodes with a bit of a challenge. So I don't know if maybe you want to throw out a challenge for people on how they can build their active listening skills.
Mm-hmm. And I really like these little challenges because I think it gives people something actionable to kind of take away. So I think the biggest thing for me, so we talked about how difficult it can be to really focus, particularly when we're in a busy situation and we've got lots going on. And so I think that's the biggest take-home challenge for people is a couple times within your day, whether it's in the workplace, with your family, whatever it happens to be, really focus on actively listening. So by that, I mean shutting off everything else that you're paying attention to, shutting off all the busyness in your head, just paying attention to the person you're communicating with, and then doing your darndest to do the connect and understand piece of this. So, you know, when we talk about empathy, we'll get into this a little bit more, but when we're talking to somebody and, like you mentioned before, Mike, trying to figure out what we're going to say next and, you know, trying to build an argument in some cases, right? That just completely shuts us off from being able to actively listen. So just that's the big thing for people. Shut off everything else, focus only on the person and your own understanding of what they're saying.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.